This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, everybody, just a heads up for this episode, the trigger warning here that there is talk of suicide, sexual assault, and gun violence in this episode. So if you're triggered by any of those things, you might want to skip this week and join us again next week. Thanks.
Hey everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Cullen II, and with me, as always, is...
Sesame, 2004 and 2005 was a weird time for American cinema. Don't try to appropriate, quote-unquote, black culture to the point where it's almost like a minstrel show and makes people severely uncomfortable even during the time when said movie was made, let alone 20 years later in Carta.
Okay, are you sticking with that name?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I am.
Okay, for like forever?
Until like next week or something, probably.
Oh, okay. Just making sure, just checking, because...
Yeah.
I was going to say that might take a while to write that on forms and stuff when you're... applying for things
and
whatnot.
Tombstones and stuff too. Yeah,
because I think you have to pay by the letter on the tombstone thing. You know?
Do, yeah.
So, that would suck.
Yep.
Just make sure you don't end up in a drive-by or anything soon. So
I hope not. I really hope not.
Yeah. So today, folks, we are covering the very topical film. Not really.
Yes.
The 2005. Cinematic classic Havoc.
Yep.
It was directed by Barbara Coppel, Coppel. I don't know which it is, but it was written by Stephen Gagan. I don't know how to pronounce his name either, because I suck at pronouncing people's names. And based on a story written by Jessica Kaplan. Film stars Anne Hathaway, Bijou Phillips, Shuri Appleby, Michael Biehn, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Matt O'Leary, Freddie Rodriguez, Laura Sangiacomo, Mike Vogel, Raymond Cruz, Alexis Dezina, and in one of his early performances, Channing Tatum. There's also a short scene featuring Josh Peck from Drake and Josh. You know, just getting on the topical stuff here. So,
Yep.
Yeah, so we have somebody who co-starred with somebody who was unfortunately sexually assaulted.
Yes.
And we also have the wife of someone who sexually assaulted people in this movie. So,
yeah, and also, too, this actress is suspiciously in a lot of movies where she gets sexually assaulted and or plays a very young groupie in another movie called Almost Famous when she was like 14.
Yeah.
And she plays a groupie.
Yeah, that's
who does sexual relations with grown men in rock bands.
And that's Bijou. Bijou Phillips, who is the wife of Danny Masterson, the scumbag from that '70s show. He's not in that one. He's the only cast member not in it. But from that '70s show, I almost said that '90s show.
I'm like, wait a minute, he better not be in that.
No, he's not.
I don't know. I watched it, but I forgot. I was like, holy shit.
We covered it previously for the podcast, so
yeah, we did. I don't even know.
Yeah. Anyways, what are your initial thoughts here on this two-decade-old film here?
I think it's probably one of the best movies of all time, but for the completely opposite reasons that you would think.
Okay.
I think it's almost like a tribute to just like having no sense of consciousness when it comes to like race relations in America. Just like,
yeah,
it's just like, oh my god, like we could just throw in a white girl to say the N-word like millions of times, totally, like it's fine. Like, and then we got these other guys, you know, thinking because they like watched a rap video once that like now they're like they're hard bro and you know stuff like that. They know what it's like to live on the streets and stuff like that. Like, oh my god. Like I've seen movies like this in the past. I've seen this concept in like TV shows here and there, but never to such a cartoonish extreme that this movie presents itself to. And plus, it's got 2004 lighting. If you know what I'm talking about, a lot of movies in 2004, 2005 had a very specific lighting that went on for about maybe 3 or 4 years. It kind of ended around 2008, 2009. It's like a bright-ish glow kind of thing. You know better than
I think it's like more like color tinting and stuff to things. It's kind of like a like there's almost like a yellowish glow over things at times. Yeah. You know, and in a lot of movies and TV shows, they'll use that to represent like being in the South or in Mexico or something.
Right.
And so, this is Southern California, so it makes sense. Like even if you watch, like, Breaking Bad, which one of the actors from this movie was in. Raymond Cruz. In that show, like, when they were in Albuquerque, it had more of a bluish tint. Not quite total bluish, but then when they were in any scenes that took place in Mexico, it had a yellowish tint.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting way. I mean, it's been done. I mean, it was done in like Traffic and some other movies too, where that kind of thing happens, where whenever you're in Mexico for some reason, it's yellow.
Interesting. Okay, that makes sense, because I saw a meme recently where it said that it's like anytime a movie's in Mexico, it had like this yellow thing.
Yeah,
I didn't really understand it, but now I get it. Like when you explained it. Yeah, but this, but the one good thing about this movie, though, is that it's inspired me to join the gang, because it like depicted like how great it is to be in the gang and how cool it is.
Okay.
And like you got like your quote, like your crew with you, and you got each other's back, so it's like a family.
How do you go about doing this?
I don't know, but I'm thinking of just driving to like a really like impoverished part of the city and kind of just look for a group of guys just sort of hanging out, and I'll just like go up to them like really gingerly, mind you, because I don't want to like, you know, kind of like what's this guy doing walking up to us kind of thing, you know. So I want to kind of like approach them like a very very kind of like excuse me guy, you know, kind of thing. And I'd be like, hey, I know it's a weird question and everything, but okay if I just like hang out with you guys tonight, you know, and just be like, you know, and see what they say. Maybe they'll say no. And be,
I think it would help if you were sexy and like a woman.
Well, I don't think that would work out for me, because I don't know about that. But
if you looked a little bit more like Anne Hathaway, it might help.
I don't think there's enough plastic surgery in the world to make me look like Anne Hathaway circa 2004. But let alone circa 2024.
Yes.
And so I'd be like, hey, you know.
She basically looks the same today as she did 20 years ago.
It's a little bit different. But
not much.
And so I'd be like, hey, you know. And like they could like check me to see if I got a wire or anything like that. Like, hey, I'm not a cop or anything. You can check me. And I just kind of wanted to see what your guys, you know, do or whatever. Just like, I'll help you out or whatever. You know, like if the cops come by, I'll just be like, oh, I'm just hanging out with these guys. I'm not a cool officer or whatever.
Well,
you know, I'll slowly, I'll slowly kind of wear them down over a period of like the summer coming up. I think I'll start probably around the end of April or like maybe like the third week of April. So when it's going to get a little bit warmer, because I don't want to start during the peak of summer. I want to at least have a couple months before, you know,
it gets too hot out. Yeah.
What's that?
Before it's too hot out, and then you got to, you know, wear more sunscreen.
Exactly. And so, like, I don't want to be doing that, but, like, and then just sort of, like, you know, like, maybe get invited to a party, and then, like, I'll awkwardly try to flirt with some of the people, and then hopefully I won't end up going through a bad initiation process where I have to have sex with, like, three of the members, because I don't think that's possible for me to do that. But,
yeah.
And then they'll eventually ask if I could be part of their crew, you know? And then I'm thinking, personally, the Crips, just because I think blue is a better color than red. I'm just not a fan of red, you know? And the Crips still has a longer history as well.
I mean,
well
no offense to our listeners. Our listeners, no offense.
And plus, with me, too, it's not so much of having, quote, bad blood, no pun intended, with the blood. So it's not like I have any actual, like, animosity towards them. It's just that I would prefer the Crips over Bloods. It's sort of like an aesthetic type.
Just because you don't look good in red. Basically,
I don't. I just don't. And so, like, so it would be like, oh, well, you know, I see a guy for the Bloods. I'm going to go, you know, fight. No, that's stupid. I'm not going to do that. And but this movie inspired that. And so, if you see me over the summer, and if I'm like decked out in blue, they probably accepted me, or at least maybe I'm going through like a training process or some kind of, you know, like a almost like a temp type of situation. You know,
either that or you became like a really big fan of the Toronto Blue Jays.
That's probably the more likely. that's probably the more likely scenario. Actually,
yes.
Anyway, that was you could feel free to edit some of that rant out. So.
No, I'm keeping the whole thing in, man. So basically, this movie, my reaction to it is that so this is the type of movie that Ben Shapiro would watch and say, man, they don't make movies like this anymore.
Exactly. Like, this is a masterpiece.
Yes. This is just like reality, man.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, Lord.
So, I'm like trying my best to not talk about the actual movie.
Yes, I know. I've noticed this. Anyway,
because it's just so bad. It's terrible.
There's really not a lot that happens in this movie. But
there isn't. It's so horrible. It's awful.
So I will say that, I mean, the bright light of this movie was Anne Hathaway.
Yes.
I think her acting in it was really well done. I think the worst acting in the movie is from one of my favorite actors.
That's
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Oh, my God.
He's horrible in this movie.
So cringe. Oh, my God. So cringe. Like, I wanted to slap him.
I'm like, dude. Oh, boy. He like went full, like, full, as they call it, wigger. Yeah. Yes.
That was a phrase back in the 90s that was popularized.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, it's, I think you could infer what that means. And
I remember being called that because I wore a starter jacket at one point. So
I was called that too. Ironically, from my neighbor who lived across the street from me, who was actually really into like gangster rap and stuff, and I wasn't. But then he called me it.
Maybe that's why, because basically it's like a wannabe. So maybe he was.
But I wasn't, though. That's the thing. If anyone, he would be the person that name would be ascribed to, not
me.
Well,
basically, he probably thought that he was and wasn't a wannabe.
Oh, gotcha. So, I wasn't even doing anything that was. I don't remember, whatever. But then he ended up like pushing me to the ground for some reason. I don't remember. That was the whole thing. And then, it was a weird time in the 90s. But then again, that kind of makes sense because, like you said, right, this script was actually written in the early 90s.
Yeah, a little bit about the history of this before we get into the film. The development and writing of this film, according to Wikipedia, going to give him credit where credit is due. The original treatment of the script was written in 1993 by Jessica Kaplan, who was only 14 years old at the time.
Wow.
And it was based on her own observations of her affluent white classmates in West Los Angeles. Her script was then sold to New Line Cinema 2 years later when she was 16 for $150,000. And that it was being developed at this production company called Single Cell Pictures, which was headed by Michael Stipe of REM. It was originally titled The Powers That Be, and it was a drama about Beverly Hills High students who try to get involved with the South Central Los Angeles gangster rap music scene, and a young male teacher who helps the main character deal with the tragedy as a result of said escapades. So the story is a little different than what we got. This actually sounds kind of more like a Dangerous Minds wannabe or something, but yeah, like with a twist. The script went unused for 2 years, eventually gaining traction with the studio after it received a rewrite from Stephen Gahan in 1997. And then Peter Horton was attached to direct, and the script was later retitled Havoc. I still don't understand why. Then Tony Kaye was approached to direct the film. He had problems with the script and made a series of demands, which included him having full control of rewriting the script, which, you know, obviously a studio is not going to let you do unless you're, you know, somebody like huge or something, you know? And then on June 6th of 2003, shortly before filming began, sadly, Jessica Kaplan, who wrote this original treatment and story, was killed in a plane crash in Los Angeles, along with four other people, including her uncle. So the film is dedicated to her. So, yeah. And then, other little bit of history of the production here before we get into the story that we're avoiding. When the script was sold in 1995, actors such as Alicia Silverstone, Stephen Dorff, Ethan Hawke, and Christian Slater were considered for roles. And then when they went into production, Mandy Moore was originally cast as Allison, the main character, but dropped out and was replaced by Anne Hathaway, her Princess Diaries co-star. And Moore reportedly left the project because she felt uncomfortable with the film's subject matter. Like, I don't know why you would have signed on in the first place if you... Anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
And Jenna Malone was originally set to play Emily, the Bijou Phillips character, but she left the project shortly after Moore left as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's our history behind the movie. So what happens in this cinematic masterpiece of a film?
Okay, we finally came to it. God damn it. Let me clear my throat. It's going to be a big one. So begins with this kid. He's like making a documentary about Allison and her friends. I guess he's sort of their friend, kind of, a little bit. They never really said, but that's sort of implied, I guess. And they're basically just kind of being interviewed about why they're doing what they're doing. Allison, point blank, which is kind of stupid because she just gave the game away in the first scene of the movie, so that's already dumb. You're not supposed to do that, but okay. She basically said, like, yeah, we're bored and we're teenagers and we live very sheltered lives because our families are rich. And so we do this to basically feel alive. There you go. End of movie. Like,
yeah.
Why would you do that? Like, that's not what you're supposed to do in the movie. You're not supposed to, for one thing, they say show, don't tell. But if you're going to tell, don't tell at the very beginning of the movie. Okay. Sorry. That's my nitpick, part one.
The thing is, it's like, okay, this film had a very, at times, documentary feel in a way, but not, they didn't go full documentary like a mockumentary sort of style. Like, mockumentary doesn't necessarily mean comedy like The Office or Waiting for Guffman or right. something. It's just, you know, a fake documentary.
It's a documentary within the movie. Like,
I think if they were somehow able to do that, but a lot of the movie, you know, obviously the dude with the camera couldn't have gone into the gangland and stuff, you know?
Right, so exactly. Let's go film all the gang activity and the illegal activity taking place.
With my expensive camera, you know?
Exactly. So, no, he was like, not doing that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just like, it had an interesting thing, or if they would have just had the story cut from that to how I would have made the movie better. And I know I'm avoiding talking about the movie more by telling you how I would have made it better. But what I think it would have worked well if you had these scenes of interviews with more than just Anne Hathaway's character. And
she's like the only one that he really really films that much.
And maybe, you know? Maybe did kind of like what The Office does with your talking heads or something and cut away. Because at the time, the whole talking heads sort of thing, I mean, that kind of comes from like the real world, you know, the TV show. I think it would have worked really well if you had like cutaways to this kid filming, talking to the different people involved in the story. You know, I'm not necessarily the gang members, but at least the wannabes in Los Angeles, would have been nice to talk to them and have something where you could then go from that to actual, you know, the real world footage of them doing what they're talking about or something. You know, I would have cut back and forth from that. It would have flowed better. It would have been a better movie, and it might have had a better impact. But that's just my feeling.
Yep. And also, too, just to kind of emphasize how rich these teenagers' parents are. It takes place in the Palisades.
Yeah.
Which is a very affluent part of Los Angeles. And it's also where most of the TV show Transparent takes place. That's yeah. The show where the person's transgender.
Yeah.
And comes out as trans, like, in their early 70s or something yeah. like that. And a lot of that takes place in the Palisades. Very, very affluent area. Very, you know, a lot of rich people live there.
And the reason I brought up the whole documentary type thing is that the director, she is primarily known as a documentary filmmaker. So I think almost everything else she's made, maybe there's like one or two other ones that aren't, but almost everything, every other movie she's made has been a documentary film.
Interesting.
She's a well-respected documentary filmmaker who's been doing films since like the 70s.
Oh, wow.
1972 was her first movie. And her latest film came out a couple years ago. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so here we go. Let's just get into it. Rip the Band-Aid off. And,
okay.
So they're hanging out. What's that?
I said, okay.
Okay. So they're hanging out in the parking lot with their crew called the PLC or the LCP. I don't remember what it was called. I think it was called the PLC, their quote gang. And they're being interviewed, of course, about their lifestyle or why they have embraced gangster culture. One of the guys says that he doesn't like being white, I guess, or something like that. And, you know, or white ass culture or something. I don't know. And then there's a rival gang. I don't know if they're a gang or just another group of people that were hanging out on the other side. Didn't really understand that. But like, it reminded me of the fight scene in Romeo and Juliet, from the one with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah,
Winslet.
Not Kate Winslet. Claire Danes.
Oh, sorry, Claire Danes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of that fight scene, but like a bad version of it, basically. If you know what I'm talking about, there's like a site at the beach.
Yeah.
There's a fight. Yeah, okay. And
yeah, I've seen that movie probably about 30 times, so I do know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. It reminded me of that, but like a really dumb version. So they get the thing that, okay, so god, there's so many nitpicks in here. So for one thing, it's stupid to begin with. The whole premise of this movie is ridiculous. It's not, it shouldn't even be taken seriously at all right off the bat.
I mean honestly, there were people like these kids when around this time or earlier, even, you know, like in the 90s and the early 2000s, that acted like this, that were white kids that acted you know, quote unquote black or whatever. You know, but it was usually like they're pointing out in this movie, too. It was usually just filtered through television, and it wasn't like real, like, talk. Like, they would watch a rap video and then, you know, mimic what the guy on MTV was doing or something, you know?
Right. And so that's what they're doing. But my huge number one problem with this movie, aside from the entire point of it, is that they get into a fight with an actual group of people that look like they're minorities of some caliber.
Yeah.
And then it's the fake white people that won the fight. Really? Like, are you serious? Like, come on.
I couldn't tell if those people were like minorities or other people from their school or from their school district or something, or what the deal was.
The one guy looked like he could maybe be like Latino a little bit.
But a Latino could be going to that school though too. So.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. It could be a rival quote unquote gang. But, like, why would they win the fight? I just didn't want them to win the fight, you know, because I hate them. So I was already kind of mad that they won the fight. And then and then the police came, and then they went off to drive off. And then they had a party at this, the kid's house was doing a documentary. I guess his family's moving to Chicago. And he never really said one way or the other if he's moving with them, which I imagine he would. because Emily, which is played by Bijou Phillips.
Yeah.
She's the best friend of Allison. She's like, does that mean yet you're not coming with us to school next year? And they kind of didn't really answer her. And it's like, do you think he's just not going to move with this family in Chicago? Where is he going to live? Like, I don't.
But they never follow up on any of it either. So
he's not really a main character in this movie. So he's there, but he's not really there. And so they have this dumb party. He films the party. They get into some really cringe rap lyrics. Allison's mimicking a song where she drops the N-word. Well, with the A at the end, not the hard R, but whatever, still.
But still, yeah.
And she says it like four times, and she's singing, I don't know what song, it's like a Destiny's Child song, maybe? I don't know. And then, and it looks like Emily, it looks like, what's Allison's boyfriend's name? I don't give a shit. Whatever, that guy. And then,
the boyfriend's name is Toby.
I don't care.
It's Toby.
Yeah, Toby, that's a gangster name right there.
Yeah.
If I ever heard a gangster name, it's definitely Toby. And
unfortunately, the name Toby just makes me think of The Office, as we were talking earlier about The Office.
Exactly. But, it's like, wait, what? And then, And then it looks like he's trying to, like, impress Emily a little bit, like, trying to flirt with her. And Allison kind of gets a little bit jealous. So she kind of calls him up and starts kissing him or whatever. And then he's like, she's my bitch. And then she's like, yeah, I'm his bitch or whatever. I'm like, okay. And then I just the idea of seeing Anne Hathaway utter the phrase, I'm his bitch. I can't. Like, I just can't do it. Like, I'm sorry. Like, if I were Anne Hathaway, I bet you she is probably so embarrassed of making this movie. I bet you there's times where throughout the day where she's thinking about stuff. And I'm sure at least every once in a while, maybe once every few months, this movie pops up in her mind and she's like, God damn it. Like, I can't believe he puts it in this movie. You know what I mean?
Well,
she forgets it, but still, that's still in her memory bank.
I mean, when it came out, because they took the editing away from the director, the studio did. So, so it was completely like re-edited from what the director wanted it to be. And you can actually tell that. So Bijou Phillips and Anne Hathaway both refused to do any press for the movie. And then it caused the movie to not be released in theaters. And this was direct to video.
And can you imagine how fucked up that is to an Anne Hathaway film?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Channing Tatum.
I mean, that's just ridiculous to think of that.
I mean, even Shiri Appleby and Michael Biehn and Mike Vogel and other people that are in this movie, you could open a movie today with them in it. It's just, I don't know.
It's insane to me to imagine it, like, yeah.
Freddie Rodriguez, he's popular. Yeah.
I just can't. I mean, I know she hasn't been in much lately for a while, but still, like, she's a very accomplished actor, you know, and so is Bijou Phillips.
At this time, this was like one of her ways of trying to break, I think in a way, break her mold of being in kids movies. So this might have been why she chose this movie, because this was like after the Princess Diaries and movies like The Cat Returns and The Other Side of Heaven and stuff like that, and Ella Enchanted, you know, movies that were definitely not movies where she was going to be using the N-word.
Exactly. I didn't even know she was a child actor.
I'm saying more childish type movies. She wasn't necessarily. Okay. I mean, she did start out when she was like a teen, but I'm just saying that it was kind of like, you know, but like the Princess Diaries are like Disney movies, you know, so it's like you're not going to go from starring in a movie with Julie Andrews and then, you know, if you want to change your image, you definitely want to do something like Havoc.
Yeah, I guess.
Literally, the movie she did prior to this was The Princess Diaries 2.
That's hilarious. It goes straight into Havoc. And so I forgot what else. The party happens, and then the next day during school, I guess, or some bullshit, or she goes to see her. What's that?
Yeah, I mean, at the party, she ends up, you know, giving a BJ to her boyfriend in a car.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. And the guy's like in a really, moaning. Like,
a really weird scene.
It's a very weird scene. And Okay.
There were so many scenes in this movie that were just there. It's weird to say this, but they were just there that made me feel really uncomfortable, that I think were just in the script to show Anne Hathaway topless.
Yeah, I think that was the point.
And Bijou Phillips. But yeah, it was just like there were some scenes like there was no point to it.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah. And so they decide, Toby and Bijou, Toby and Emily and Allison and another friend, I think, they decide to actually go downtown or go to, you know, the mean streets or whatever.
Well, before that, there was a weird scene with Allison and her parent, her dad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. She like meets her dad for what's going to be lunch. And then he's just basically trying to tell her to, you know, basically, you know, be a better person or something.
Right.
But he seems like a distant father, but there was no like development of this whole story. And
no.
Then we did have our scene where we had prior to that, where we do get the idea that Allison isn't really close with her parents and she stays a lot of times at Emily's house. And we had the scene where we realized that Emily's brother is Josh Peck.
Yes.
I just had to point that out.
Yes.
because when I see Bijou Phillips and I see 2005 Josh Peck, I think, man, those look like siblings.
Yep. I mean, sure.
Not at all.
Why not? And then he makes a remark about Allison being hot, whatever, yeah. Fine. He's like 15 at the time, who cares?
Uh-huh.
And then and they're like, come on, whatever his name is, Dustin, I don't know. And then
His name was Josh.
It was Josh, that's hilarious. And so, oh God. And so they go downtown, you know, they're seeing like what people really live like, and they're like visibly getting nervous because they've never been there before.
Yeah.
And so they starting to realize that like what they're doing is just for like fun, and it's like cosplaying essentially, but full time, which is really weird. That's the other thing too. I didn't write any notes down, but I did write one note down saying how huge nerds they all are. Like, I mean, like, they're not like dressed like an elder shit, but if they were, they would be called nerds because they're like doing gangster culture somehow. It's not cosplay. I'm like, no, these kids are cosplaying 24/7, which is like the nerdest thing you can do.
Yeah,
like, I mean,
usually when a girl dresses up like Captain Marvel, she only does it for the Comic-Con. She doesn't do it all the time.
She doesn't show up to school the next day dressed as Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Or the guy's not dressed up as the Hulk and just sitting like in chemistry class or some shit. Like, you know what I mean? But these kids, they're just doing it full time, you know? So they're thinking, all right, now it's time to do the real deal. Let's actually go downtown and see what it's like. So they, you know, end up seeing some people not living their greatest lives, things of that nature, people doing drugs publicly. One person's getting the BJ, apparently, just like behind a telephone pole, I guess. I don't know. And then they go and want to buy drugs off this dude. And so Toby and the dude are like basically haggling over how much to pay for it, because I guess that's what you do when you're rich.
Yeah.
Of course, you're rich. And so money's not an object. But hey, let's haggle the drug dealer
and this
to
is,
get the price.
Freddie Rodriguez's character named Hector. Yeah.
Yeah, Hector. And so Hector, you know, being a nice guy he is, actually agrees to sell his drugs for $20 less than what they're worth. Nice guy. I mean, you know, he's losing money off of this exchange. Not good enough for Toby. Toby doesn't like how, quote, light the bag feels. Okay, lesson number one. Never, ever, ever, ever in your life, even if this person is a close friend of yours, accuse a drug dealer of giving you less than what you paid for. That's number one. Like, come on, really? Like, and so, especially
I do that all the time whenever I go to get my drugs at the pharmacy.
Well,
I mean, wait.
You shouldn't do it.
At the pharmacy?
For the pharmacy, exactly. Hey, this costs too much. Or you didn't give me enough, I don't know, whatever. Like,
I don't have enough Benadryl in these.
Exactly. What the hell, man? You, I'm short here. And so Toby thinks he's gonna, I mean, really, again, we're talking, so these kids, I almost feel bad for them in a sense, because I think they have severe psychological disorders that are very untreated or undiagnosed, because the cosplaying 24/7 That's already indicator number one. But you can brush that off. It's like, oh, they're just kids. They're experimenting, whatever. Fine. But now Toby has crossed over from cosplaying to, I genuinely think that he thinks he actually is a gangster at this point. I think he's gone beyond. So he's got, like, maybe schizophrenia, maybe, I don't know, but maybe some kind of mental illness where he actually now believes he is the thing. Like, it's not, it's like watching Star Wars and then you think you are Anakin Skywalker. Like, you are watching yourself in the movie. He thinks he is the guy.
Wait a
second.
So
he's going to go.
Wait a second. So are you trying to tell me that I'm not one with the Force?
Well, you might be with the Force, but I don't think you are the character.
Are you sure?
You might have the Force.
Because I really identify with one of the characters in Star Wars.
You could identify with the character, but not actually believe that you are the character.
So I am not Jabba the Hutt?
No.
Okay, cool. Just checking.
You could like, identify with certain qualities. Why would you, for one thing, how would you want to identify with Jabba the Hutt? Of all the characters. like, not Luke, not Anakin, not Leia, you know, not Han.
The true hero of those movies is Jabba the Hutt.
Sure. Yeah. Whatever. And then, there's actually one of the cartoons, the Clone Wars, I think it is. One of the students is actually of the race of Jabba the Hutt. Like, he's actual Jedi in training.
Yeah.
What's that?
A Huttese.
Yeah, sorry, the Huttese, yeah.
Yeah.
And so Toby, in his great wisdom, decides to confront Hector as Hector's walking away, and then he tells Hector that he's, quote, light. Hector takes great offense to this, as any businessman would, that a client is accusing him of being short with him. And so he tries again to a fight with Hector. Again, total bonehead move to do. Hector pulls a gun on him, is basically going to execute him publicly in front of his friends. Toby pisses his pants. Hector mocks him for said urinating in his undergarments. And then Allison pleads with him to spare Toby's life. He does so, and then he tells him not to ever come around these parts ever again. So naturally, Allison and her friends show up like the next day.
Do you have dreams that you want to achieve but are scared to do so due to self-doubt, fear, and other people's criticism? I have just what you need. You need a dose of the Living the Dream with Curveball podcast, where I interview guests that will motivate and inspire you to stop at nothing to achieve your dreams. And always remember, if you believe, you can achieve.
The Living the Dream with Curveball podcast is available on your favorite podcast app.
Hey, everybody. Why don't you give the old Black Lincoln Collective podcast a listen? We're funny, we're fat, and we're here 24/7 at blcpodcast.com. Anytime you want to listen, anywhere, all your favorite podcast apps. Of course, we have a YouTube channel where you can stream live with the show. Check out our shorts. We're funnier the less you hear of us. That's been a Black Lincoln Collective podcast at blcpodcast.com.
What else happens?
Okay.
So
basically, actually, the next day, Allison meets up with Hector again in the store. I'm sorry. The next night, Allison and her girlfriends return to the location of the drug deal. And then there, she and her friends meet up with Hector again and his crew. He invites them to a house party at his house. They get into some little, you know, making out with some gang guys and shit. And before they leave, Hector tells Allison of a motel where his crew regularly party, and invites her to stop by if she wishes. So then the next day, we got Eric with his, like, film camera asking questions, and the interview turns into a bizarre mind game that Allison is playing, where she's, like, flirting with him and trying to get him to have sex with her or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, which made no sense. Anyway, so the
It doesn't.
Again, another scene where they just needed to show Anne Hathaway's nipples.
Yep, pretty much. I mean, that was the whole point.
That was the other name for this movie.
What?
Anne Hathaway's nipples.
It probably actually would have sold better. And yeah.
Yep. So anyways, then that evening, Allison goes to this store in downtown and meets up with Hector in the store, creates her own little meet cute in the store or something, you know, where she basically runs into him. And then he shows her around the neighborhood. Then their tour ends in the evening when these police arrive.
I know.
And then have this like big, like kind of drug bust sort of thing going on. And Allison winds up being arrested with the other people there. And she ends up in jail, and they have this really crappy scene with her in this juvenile detention center, which was pointless. And
it's so I know, it's dumb.
Like I feel like this about every scene in this movie, but
this movie is just so stupid. I can't get over it. Yeah. I mean, god damn it. And I'm sorry I picked this movie, to be honest. I really am.
It's okay. I'm actually enjoying talking about it though.
This is actually one of the most bizarre movies I've ever seen, but for completely weird reasons. Like we've watched Troll 2. What was it? Like the movie I can't even remember now. My mind's going blank of how many weird movies watch.
Yeah, and it's like this is like, you know, recently we covered Judgment Night, and this is kind of like a follow-up to Judgment Night, but in a weird way.
It's like Judgment Night 2, but like for teenagers, basically.
Yes,
like,
but
unfortunately, but no more, one gets pushed off a roof in this movie.
No, unfortunately. And yeah. So she meets with him in this store and then goes, you know, jail at the end. And so her parents have to bail her out, and somehow she's like let off the hook by her parents, which I'm like, yeah, if I was arrested, I would have been grounded forever, you know?
Just with crack dealers, especially.
Yeah, just what I'm saying. I mean
what the fuck?
I mean, if they were just like, you know, regular cocaine dealers, then I wouldn't be. But if they were crack
dealers,
that's different.
Cocaine is more of a sophisticated drug. Yeah, that's for like stockbrokers and like rich people. That's okay. Crack is for like the poor and the lowly and the meek.
I mean,
you know,
I got grounded once because I went down the neighborhood from where I lived to go play in a creek when I was like 12. So I'm just saying.
Well, it's just different values of parenting.
Yes.
Yeah. Some people are like, hey, you know, just don't hang out with crack dealers anymore and don't get arrested with them anymore. Wag your finger. And their mom.
So basically what I'm learning is that a creek is worse than a crack.
Yes, okay. It is. And weirdly, her mom makes her soup as though like she's sick from school, which, okay, don't understand that, but what that was about, I guess they were just trying to be funny or something.
It's,
but
it's this new soup that Campbell's makes that that washes away any any experience you have with gangs. It's like this,
yes, that's what it is.
It's chunky gang be gone, and it's
gang be gone. Or Campbell's crack soup.
Yes. Campbell's crack. Mm-mm, good. Anyway, so the
oh god.
But so then later she and Allison decide to head downtown the next evening to hang out with Hector's crew, you know.
Again.
They end up first interrupting a party that's like a party for like a baby.
Yeah, I know.
But then later that night they meet up at the hotel with his crew and or the motel or whatever you want to call it, and they start drinking and playing games and stuff like dice. And Allison and Emily ask Hector if they can join his crew.
Yeah, they want to be initiated into a gang after hanging out for like 3 days
and being and one of them being arrested already. So it's like.
Yeah.
So he informs them of their initiation to join the gang is that the two must roll a dice, and the number they roll on the dice corresponds to the number of the gang members that they must have sex with.
Yep.
So Allison rolls a 1 and Emily rolls a 3. And so then Hector and Allison go pair off and start to do their thing. And then she has second thoughts and refuses to have sex with him and is thrown out the room by Hector's brother. And then she tries to get Emily out there, but Emily says she wants to stay. But then she starts getting, like, basically raped by three guys.
Well, that's the thing. This movie concerns me a great deal.
Because it places the blame on her.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it was her idea. I'm like, okay, one thing, there was no discussion about, like, having sex with three of them at the same exact time. So but, that's not something you could just imply.
But
like,
regardless, even if she agreed to do that, she said no at one point.
Right.
And that moment and so, she said no, that made it rape. So
and so Allison basically covers for them.
Yeah.
Against her friend. Like, so, like
so,
okay.
Yeah. So basically then Emily goes to the cops and isn't answering Allison's phone calls and stuff. And so it's basically like, because they get out of there eventually. And then this happens. And so Emily's, you know, basically trying to, you know, get these guys for rape, which is understandable. She can only identify really Hector. And so then the next day, Allison returns and confronts Hector over the previous night, but he responds by saying he didn't do anything wrong.
Of course not.
And that he only did what she and Emily had asked him to do. Basically, he basically says that they did nothing wrong because that's what Emily wanted to do and stuff. And at that moment, a woman shows up at the door, surprising Allison, much to the amusement of Hector, who mocks Allison for thinking he had feelings for her and calling her a poser.
Yeah, man.
Who's only playing games and knows nothing about the realities of gang life, which is true.
Exactly. So,
yeah. It's like she saw a production of West Side Story and then decided she wanted to be in a gang, you know? It's like,
yeah.
So it's like, so and that girl like think has a baby or something too, so it was like weird. But or no, she was just calling her in. I don't think she had a baby. I think that no, that was another scene. Never mind. The same I'm getting scenes confused in my head. So that same day Emily is shown accusing Hector and his crew of gang rape, and Allison is brought in for questioning, but claims to know nothing about the rape.
Mm-hmm.
What a good friend she is.
Yep.
And but Hector is arrested anyways. And then, you know, his brother and another member of his crew vow to, you know, seek out and basically they want to go try to kill Allison and Emily. They, however, have this very hilarious scene where they get lost in Bel Air.
Oh, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
So funny.
Yeah. And the cops basically tell them to, you know, stay the hell out of Dodge. And so then Toby, who I almost forgot was in this movie.
Well.
And his buddy Sam, who's like way over the top, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and his other buddy,
Channing Tatum.
Nick, played by a young Channing Tatum. I swear he only has like three lines in this whole fucking movie. It's weird.
Yeah, he's weird. Really not.
It's weird seeing a movie with Channing Tatum where he doesn't say much.
I know. It's just
strange. They all do this like thing with the kid making the film and acting all tough on camera with guns pointed at it and everything, which is dangerous, by the way. Should never point guns at a camera.
Nope.
Or at anything, nope, for that matter. In my opinion, guns should just be completely outlawed. But anyway, so, but I'm not against the Second Amendment. Wait, what? I'm confusing. So
wait, what? Yeah.
So the, they basically decide to go and drive down to downtown to the hotel room. Or the motel, I mean, and try to take care of things, and but they're in the motel and they violently bust in and pop a couple caps, and there's a group of Latina women in there and a baby.
Yay!
And Toby's sitting there trying to work up the nerve to shoot them.
Like what?
But the woman's like, "Don't hurt the baby! Don't hurt the baby!"
But why would you shoot them? They're not the ones that...
They had nothing to do with this. I mean...
Makes no sense. Like, yeah, let's just do revenge, like, on other people within Hector's family.
I mean, my thing is what you should have done is, if you would have written this differently, you would have had the actual gang members there, and then a woman walks out with a baby.
Right.
And then it clicks in Toby's head to be like, shit, I can't do this. There's a fucking kid here, you know, sort of thing. Yeah, but...
And as they're distracted, then Hector shoots him after he kills him.
And I'd have been happy with that. Anyway, so...
Yeah.
yeah. And he would have deserved it.
Yep.
Just for the way he talks.
Yeah, it's the fringe factor is dialed up so high.
Yeah. But
he deserved to die.
Back in the Palisades or wherever the fuck they live, they have... there's a scene where... Allison goes to confront Emily, and Emily's in her bathroom trying to commit suicide, and she's naked for some stupid reason, just because I think
of course.
Because, yeah. You know, we needed to show Bijou Phillips naked again for no reason. I have nothing against nudity in a movie, if it makes sense and it's warranted. But unneeded nudity in a movie where it doesn't really need to be there, I don't like at all. I absolutely hate it. Because at that point, you might as well just be making a porn. Not that I'm saying this is like a porn, but you know what I mean.
Sometimes, some cases, it looks like it almost is. And
then, yeah, exactly.
It's, or sex scenes, that's another thing.
Yeah.
I just don't like very much.
No.
I never liked them.
I think it's better to just imply it and then to actually show it.
Yeah.
It's like Jaws was scarier because you didn't see him as much.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, like, if I'm going to watch people having sex, I'll just watch porn. I mean, I'm not going to watch a movie.
Exactly. You know, like. So, Emily's trying to kill herself in the bathroom, and then they're having this, like, heart-to-heart scene, which, whatever. Allison had found out from the Eric guy. The camera guy. He showed the video of them all acting tough and fronting on the camera and stuff. And they go to, she tells Emily, like, what's going on, and that, you know, that Toby and Tweedledee and Tweedledum are going to, you know, try to do something. And,
wow.
So this initially upsets her to the point where she's trying to commit suicide, but they...
And then Allison's, like, making fun of her while she's doing it.
Yeah.
Like
you're not cutting your wrist like that, are you? Or, you know, all this other shit. Right?
Like, that's going to be really painful. And, oh, by the way, those sleeping pills you're going to take, there's not enough of them to kill you, so they're just going to pump your stomach. I'm like, wow, what a great friend. Like,
it almost sounds like she knows from experience, though. So
I'm like, how does she know all this stuff? I'm like,
but then again, you know, I mean, when I was in high school, I knew about, you know, seven or eight girls that tried to commit suicide. So it's like,
yeah,
it's weird.
And interesting, Bijou Phillips was in the movie with Kate Hudson, where Kate Hudson's character takes a bunch of Quaaludes to try to kill herself. So it's like,
there's only so many stories you can tell in Hollywood. Not just you,
exactly. Apparently, if you're Bijou Phillips, you're in every God. There was like a period of like 7 years or so where, like, you get almost famous. She plays like a 14-year-old groupie.
Well, it's like for the longest time, I had a huge crush on Bijou Phillips, and now I'm reevaluating all of that. So it's like,
it's just weird because, you know, she gets raped in this movie, at least for like a few seconds before Allison, you know, grabs her and gets them out of there or whatever.
Yeah.
And then in Bully, which came out, I think, in 2005 or 2006.
Yeah.
I think she gets raped in that movie too by the bully, I guess, the one that they end up killing at the end. Spoiler, sorry, for a 20-year-old movie.
That actually came out in 2001, so it was before.
2001? Oh, okay.
It was before this movie, so yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. All right.
and it's a better movie. But anyway, so.
Yeah, it is a bit much better movie.
Yeah. Yeah, because Larry Clark is a better director, and no offense to this woman who tried to make a movie that wasn't a documentary, but. Yeah. Larry Clark, people will know from the movie Kids and other things. He's a really, I don't know, avant-garde at the time. Like, I mean, there's certain things, though, I've heard about Larry that aren't that good. So anyways, but he's a good director. So, but who knows? You know, I'm just saying speculation about things. So I'm not saying anything. Don't sue me.
Don't sue us because we make so much money from this podcast. You know,
yes.
We're gonna lose everything.
Yes. You can have it. We'll come out with All Too Real 3.
Oh, by the way, All Too Real 3. They're all three real. That makes sense. Yeah. I forgot though, to give our advice column yet, because we're an advice podcast now.
Oh yeah. And, what advice do you, maybe we can end with some advice.
Let's get through this. This movie sucks. Basically the
two cars drive by each other and then it goes to black and you hear gunshots and you don't know who the fuck died.
You don't know who dies. Probably Toby. Which is good. And then
in the original script, it was Toby and it ended with his funeral. But
yeah. Who knows? I don't know, because they won the fight in the first scene.
I actually read that somewhere. In the original script, Toby dies and they have a funeral for him at the end.
Like, really, a funeral for Toby? Come on.
Yeah. Right.
And then he's not that good of a character that warrants a funeral scene. Come on. And then and that's the movie. And then it shoots back to the very first scene when Eric is recording Allison, which she's saying how bored they are as teenagers, blah, 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 or whatever. That's the whole movie.
Yeah, and it says, and at the end she says something like, she's stating that teens will be teens, but if adults are willing to reach out to them to connect and give them even just a small amount of insight, it's like that they suddenly know everything. They now suddenly know everything, or something like that.
So,
yeah.
Just to do like a psychological analysis here. So with Toby, you've got the extreme delusion and mental illness where he actually thinks he is a gangster. He's crossed over from cosplaying to thinking he is the thing now. And with Allison, she's the opposite, where she has the self-awareness that what she's doing is fake, but then she just plays along anyway. So it's kind of almost, she's almost more mentally ill in a way than Toby is, because she knows what she's doing is false.
They prove throughout the movie too with her that she's able to kind of like code switch into different, you know, like situations, like where she can be like a real smart student and talk all like, you know, quote unquote smart, and then talk all gangsta, and then then somewhere weird in between as well, you know. So yeah,
it's a very strange movie. I would not recommend it to anyone to watch this movie. I think it's probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. I saw it back in 2005, 2006, and I guess forgot how terrible it is.
Yeah.
And I randomly thought about it about a week ago for some reason. I don't know what brought me. Maybe it was Anne Hathaway's nipples brought me, you know, memory. I don't know what it was. But I know what it was. It was this scene. If for whatever reason, that scene, memory is a really strange thing. It's very odd. And that scene popped into my head where she's flirting with Eric at her house when he's doing the document for no apparent reason. And then that reminded me, and I was like, and I remember, I didn't know the name of the movie, but I was like, Anne Hathaway gangster or something like that. And then pops up Havoc. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, now I remember the movie.
Yeah, there's not really many like reviews of this online as far as I can tell too, so it's interesting. Video reviews or audio reviews. Yeah, so
it's very strange. It's a very obscure movie, apparently.
I got a question to ask you really quick.
Sure.
What do you think the budget of this movie was?
I'm going to go with, I don't know, $5 million maybe?
$9 million.
Okay, so I was sort of close.
How much do you think the movie made?
Probably not that much, because it didn't even come out in theaters. Yeah. I don't know, maybe 500,000 maybe? I don't know.
371,000.
Okay, so I'm close. That makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah. So yeah, that made 371,000 on a budget of $9 million. So yeah.
Yeah. How much did she get paid for this, Anne Hathaway?
I got
paid a decent amount.
I have no idea. I mean, she was an established actor at the time, but who knows? She could have taken a pay cut for it because of wanting to change her image slightly, you know?
Oh, yeah, true.
Because people will do that, you know, or if they're passionate about a project or something, like I know some actors will do the thing where they do one for themselves and one for the studio sort of thing. So they'll do one that they know is going to be able to feed them for a while, and then another one where they don't get paid anything. So, yeah.
That makes sense, yeah.
And if any of you are listening out there that want to do a movie where you don't get paid anything, hit me up. It's Mike@CullenPark.com.
Wow.
Oh, boy. So, yeah. So any final advice here?
Advice is to not join the game for one thing, and doubly so when you're not even in the predicament where you might have to join the game, either because of social pressure or because of financial pressure. Yeah. If you're rich and you live in the Palisades, don't go out of your way to put yourself into danger in a bad lifestyle just because you're bored. Guess what? There are things you can do throughout the day. You have money, which means you can, I don't know, pick up archery, a sport, something. I mean, you don't need to be rich to do those things, but if you are rich, you have no real excuse at that point because money's not an object to you. So, I don't know, baseball, archery, fuck, even gun shooting for target practice, if you want to do guns, don't join a gang or pretend that you're in a gang and then get almost executed because of it because you want to impress your girlfriend while you're pretending to be a gangster, but then you're pissing your pants because you've never had a gun pointed at you. Then again, it may have been a good thing for Toby because Toby now has gone through the harrowing experience of having a gun pulled on him. So now he can check that off. He knows. Now he's faced death before. So now he knows. If anything, that maybe is why he was able to get so, you know, hardened up sounds bad. But
yeah,
you know, to go off and kill Hector and his crew because he already knows now what it feels like to be on his knees and have a freaking gun pointed to his head.
Yes. That is
but
great.
Don't do it.
That's great. And, great advice.
And I know that we're the most boring podcast in America because one of our fans has been telling us constantly on one video alone for some reason. I don't know what that is. Yeah. So please keep the comments coming. It actually helps us with engagement.
Yeah,
so if you actually think that you're offending us, that's actually hilarious because like I actually laugh at these comments. They are funny to me. So like you just please continue. Like I actually welcome it.
I usually just thank them for them. So anyway, yep. So you know, basically, you know, make sure you do that. Check out our TeePublic, check out our Patreon, give us a 5-star review wherever you can, and comment on this if you can.
Just remember, folks, that I love you. Sesame loves you. And until next time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at CullenPark.com.